hikaye. Şuri bayra bayra. Ciao robo bonice, ciao, shuji e pailera. Ciao robo bonice, ciao, shuji e pailera. Hoppa!
Five days into the Trump administration, we're joined by one of the world's best-known dissidents, the linguist and activist Noam Chomsky, Institute Professor Emeritus at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where he taught for more than 50 years. He's the author of more than 100 books. His latest book comes out today. It's titled Requiem for the American Dream, The 10 Principles of Concentration of Wealth and Power. Noam Chomsky, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us.
Glad to be with you again.
So why don't we start on this 75th day by your assessment of what has happened in these first few months?
Well, I think it was captured pretty well by a Los Angeles Times editorial, which simply called it a train wreck. But it's very consistent, very systematic. Anything that can be of assistance to ordinary people, working people, middle class people, people on the street. Any such program has to be decimated. Anything that adds to wealth and power or that increases the use of force that we carry forward. And it's done with this kind of a two-tiered system working, I presume consciously, so systematic it's hard to question. The Bannon-Trump team wants to make sure that they dominate the headlines. So whatever they do, that's what people look at. And one crazy thing after another, the assumption apparently being you'll forget the old ones by the time the new ones come in. So no one talks anymore about the 3 million illegal immigrants who voted for Clinton. That one we've forgotten. We're on to the next one. Then we'll go on to the next one. While this is going on in front, the Paul Ryan style budgetary and planning operations are going on quietly in the back, ripping to shreds any element of government that can help people either today or tomorrow. That's the point of the destruction of the environmental system. It's not just the EPA which was slashed. Most of the environmental programs were actually in the Energy Department, and their research and activist programs were slashed very seriously.
And what do you make in terms of, when you're talking about decimation, clearly one of the big failures was their inability to end Obamacare. Could you talk about what you're seeing now is the potential in terms of the healthcare system in the country, what they will try to do and what the potential is there?
Actually, there was a pretty interesting poll about it that came out a couple of days ago, simply asking people what they preferred. The Republican proposal was the lowest of the choices available. I think about 15% of the population were willing to accept it. Somewhat higher was the existing system, so-called Obamacare. And on that, it's worth bearing in mind that a lot of people don't know that Obamacare is the Affordable Care Act. So you have negative attitudes towards Obamacare, thanks to lots of propaganda, but more positive attitudes towards the Affordable Care Act because of what people see. Most popular of all, over half, was so-called public option, a government-guaranteed health care program, which is pretty remarkable because no one publicly advocates that. but it's been a consistent polling result for decades that when people are asked what they want, they say that's their choice. And in fact, that's about the only proposal that makes any sense. The U.S. Healthcare system is an international scandal. It's roughly twice the per capita costs of comparable countries and some of the worst outcomes, mainly because it's privatized, extremely inefficient, bureaucratized, lots of bill paying, lots of officials, tons of money wasted, healthcare in the hands of profit-seeking institutions, which are not health institutions, of course. And for decades, people have preferred what every other country has in some fashion, either straight national health care or heavily government-regulated health care, like, say, Switzerland. Sometimes the support is astonishingly high. So in the late Reagan years, for example, about 70% of the population thought that guaranteed health care should be a constitutional guarantee, because it's such an obvious desideratum. And about 40% thought it already was in the Constitution. The Constitution is just this holy collection of anything reasonable, so it must be there. But it just doesn't matter what people think. When Obama put through his own program, I think support for the public option was almost two-thirds, but it was simply dismantled. When this is occasionally this is discussed in the press, so New York Times, others, and they mention it. They say yes, it's a possibility, but it's called politically impossible, which is correct, which means you can't pass it through the pharmaceutical corporations and financial institutions. That's politically impossible in what's called democracy. Sometimes they say lacking political support, meaning from the institutions that really matter. There's kind of this population on the side, but we can dismiss them. Yeah.
Do you think there could be a kind of Nixon in China moment with Trump? He has in the past expressed support for single payer. He's extremely angry right now at the Freedom Caucus. He can't decide which are the villains in this more, the Freedom Caucus or the Democrats. He goes back and forth. Do you think he could sort of throw it all out? Or is it going to just go, as we're seeing in these past few days, where it looks like they're going to revive it to what the Freedom, so-called Freedom Caucus wants?
I think they'll probably revise it. Trump is all over the place. You don't know what he believes. He says almost anything that comes to his mind at 3 a.m. But the people who are really setting the policy in the background, essentially the Ryan ultra-right Republicans, they understand what they're doing. And they want to destroy the aspects of the healthcare system that are beneficial to the general public. That's systematic policies. Probably what will happen is the kind of compromise that's already being discussed with states having the right to opt out of whatever the federal program is, which might satisfy the ultra-right Freedom Caucus, make it even worse than the current Republican proposal.
I wanted to
turn to— today, incidentally, once, I think, Kansas turned down expansion of Medicaid. I mean, anything that's going to help people in need is got to be wiped out.
Noam Chomsky, I'd like to ask you about something that's been in the news a lot lately. Obviously, all the cable channels, that's all they talk about these days, is the whole situation of Russia's supposed intervention in American elections for a country that's intervened in so many governments and so many elections around the world. That's kind of a strange topic. But I know you've referred to this as a joke. Could you give us your view on what's happening and why there's so much emphasis on this particular issue?
Pretty remarkable fact that, first of all, it is a joke. Most half of the world is cracking up in laughter. The United States doesn't just interfere in elections. It overthrows governments it doesn't like, institutes military dictatorships. Simply in the case of Russia alone, it's the least of it. The U.S. government under Clinton intervened quite blatantly and openly. They didn't try to conceal it to get their man Yeltsin in all sorts of ways. So this, as I say, it's turning the United States again into a laughingstock in the world. So why are the Democrats focusing on this? In fact, why are they focusing so much attention on the one element of Trump's programs, which is fairly reasonable, the one ray of light in this gloom, trying to reduce tensions with Russia? That's, the tensions on the Russian border are extremely serious. They could escalate to a major terminal war. Efforts to try to reduce them should be welcomed. As a couple of days ago, the former U.S. ambassador to Russia, Jack Matlock, came out and said he just can't believe that so much attention is being paid to apparent efforts by the incoming administration to establish connections with Russia. I said, sure, that's just what they ought to be doing. So meanwhile, this one topic is the primary locus of concern and critique, while meanwhile, the policies are proceeding step by step, which are extremely destructive and harmful. So, you know, yeah, maybe the Russians tried to interfere in the election. That's not a major issue. Maybe the people on the Trump campaign were talking to the Russians. Well, okay, not a major point, certainly less than is being done constantly. And it is a kind of a paradox, I think, that the one issue that seems to inflame the Democratic opposition is the one thing that has some justification and reasonable aspects to it.
Well, of course, because the Democrats feel that that's the reason somehow that they lost the election. Interesting that James Comey this week said he is investigating Trump campaign collusion with Russia, when it was Comey himself who could have— who might well have been partly responsible for Hillary Clinton's defeat when he said that he was investigating her, while we now have learned at the same time he was investigating Donald Trump, but never actually said that.
Well, you can understand why the Democratic Party managers want to try to find some blame for the fact, for the way they utterly mishandled the election and blew perfect opportunity to win, handed it over to the opposition. But that's hardly a justification for allowing the Trump policies to slide by quietly, many of them not only harmful to the population, but extremely destructive, like the climate change policies. And meanwhile, focus on one thing that could become a step forward if it was adjusted to move towards serious efforts to reduce growing and dangerous tensions right on the Russian border, where they could blow up. NATO maneuvers are taking place hundreds of yards from the Russian border. The Russian jet planes are buzzing American planes. This is something that could get out of hand very easily. Both sides are, meanwhile, are building up their military forces, adding the U.S. One thing that the Russians are very much concerned about is the so-called anti-ballistic missile installation that the U.S. is establishing near the Russian border, allegedly to protect Europe from non-existent Iranian missiles. Nobody seriously believes that. This is a understood to be a first strike threat. These are serious issues. People like William Perry, who has a distinguished career and is a nuclear strategist and is no alarmist at all, is saying that we're back to the situation. This is one of the worst moments of the Cold War, if not worse. That's really serious. And efforts to try to calm that down would be very welcome. And we should bear in mind it's the Russian border. It's not the Mexican border. There's no Warsaw Pact maneuvers going on in Mexico. And that's a border that the Russians are quite reasonably sensitive about. And they've practically been destroyed several times last century right through that region.
In line with your concern about the growing threat in terms of nuclear weapons, there are also maneuvers going on off the coast of Korea. And the words that we've heard from President Trump in the last few days, that if China doesn't deal with North Korea, the U.S. will. Could you talk about his policies already, his developing policies toward Korea and toward China?
Well, it's kind of interesting to look at the record. The claim is, well, we've tried everything, nothing works, therefore we have to use force. Is it true that nothing's worked? I mean, there is a record, after all. And if you look at the record, it's interesting. 1994, Clinton established what was called the framework agreement with North Korea. And North Korea would terminate its efforts to develop nuclear weapons. The U.S. would reduce hostile acts. It more or less worked, and neither side lived up to it totally, but by 2000, North Korea had not proceeded with it.
Oké, ik zou nu live moeten zijn. Waar ben ik dan?
Oké. North Korea turned to producing nuclear weapons. In 2005, there was an agreement between North Korea and the United States. Pretty sensible agreement. North Korea agreed to terminate its development of nuclear weapons. In return, it called for a non-aggression pact, so stop making hostile threats, a relief from harsh sanctions, and provision of a system to provide North Korea with low-enriched uranium for medical and other purposes. That was the proposal. George Bush instantly tore it to shreds. Within days, the U.S. was imposing, trying to disrupt North Korean financial transactions with other countries through Macau and elsewhere. North Korea backed off, started building nuclear weapons again. Maybe you can say it's the worst regime in history, whatever you like, but they have been following a pretty rational tit-for-tat policy. And why are they developing nuclear weapons altogether? I mean, the economy's in bad shape. They could certainly use the resources. Everyone understands that it's a deterrent. And they have a proposal, actually. There's a proposal on the table. China and North Korea proposed that North Korea should terminate its further development of nuclear weapons. In return, the United States should stop carrying out threatening military maneuvers with South Korea right on its border. Not an unreasonable proposal. It's simply dismissed. Actually, Obama dismissed it too. There are possible steps that could be taken to alleviate, which could be an extremely serious crisis. I mean, if the U.S. did decide to use force against North Korea, one immediate reaction, according to the military sources available to us, is that Seoul, the city of Seoul, would simply be wiped out by mass North Korean artillery aimed at it. And who knows where it would go from there. But the opportunity to produce, to move towards a negotiated diplomatic settlement does not seem outlandish. I mean, this Chinese-North Korean proposal is certainly worth serious consideration, I would think. And it's worth bearing in mind that North Korea has some memories. They were practically destroyed by some of the most intensive bombing in history. The bombing, it's worth reading. Maybe you should read people the official Air Force history of the bombing of North Korea. It's shattering. I mean, they had flattened the country. There were no targets left. So therefore, they decided, well, we'll attack the dams, which is a war crime, of course. And the description of the attack on the dams is, without the exact wording, I hate to paraphrase it. You should really read they were simply exulting over in the official histories, Air Force Quarterly and others, about the how magnificent it'll be to see this massive flood of water coursing through North Korea, wiping out crops for Asians, the rice crops is their life. This will destroy them. It'll be magnificent. The North Koreans lived through that, and having nuclear capable B-52s flying on their border is not a joke. But most significantly, there's a record of partial success in diplomatic initiatives, total failure with sanctions and harsh moves, and options that are on the table which could be pursued. Now, instead of concern about whether somebody talked to the Russians, this is the kind of thing that should be pursued very seriously. That's what the Democrats or anyone hoping for some form of peace and justice should be working for.
Which brings us to China. President Trump said, if China is not going to solve North Korea, we will. Are you concerned that with Trump at an all-time low for presidents when it comes to popularity, with suffering defeat after defeat, lashing out and trying to focus on a foreign enemy. But at the same time, you have China coming to the United States, this meeting that he's going to have with the Chinese leader, Xi, in Mar-a-Lago. Also very interesting, considering it's a golf course. He hates golf and forbade Communist Party members to play golf. Is it more about Trump feeling he has more access to shut down press coverage or any information about who's meeting with him when it's in his private resort? But more importantly, what the agenda is there and what our relationship is with China?
Well, as you recall, one of the interesting incidents was a public discussion of significant security issues in the resort, with people sitting around drinking coffee and having drinks. Maybe they keep the press out, but they didn't seem to keep the guests out.
Well, not if you pay $200,000 a year and you're a member of Mar-a-Lago.
Then you pass through the filter.
And then you get to take photos, selfies, with the man carrying the nuclear codes, the little football.
He's extremely unpredictable. But this the relations with China are extremely serious issue. China's not going to back down on its fundamental demands concerning Taiwan, for example. And if Trump, a lot of what China's demanding, I think, is not acceptable. It's not internationally acceptable. But the reaction through use of force is just extraordinarily dangerous. I mean, you cannot play that game in international affairs. We are too close to destroying ourselves. You take a look at the record of through the nuclear age of accidental, sometimes accidental, sometimes kind of irrational actions. It's almost miraculous that we've survived. And anything that to get a good estimate of this, of the danger, take a look at the best monitor of the global security situation that we have as a simple measure, namely the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists' Doomsday Clock. This is set every year since the beginning of the nuclear age, 1947, by a group of serious specialists, scientists, political analysts, and others, who try to give a measure of the danger that the human species faces. Midnight means we're finished. In 1947, the clock was set at 7 minutes to midnight. In 1953, right after the U.S. and Russia tested hydrogen bombs, thermonuclear weapons, it went to 2 minutes to midnight. That's the closest it's been to total disaster. Right now, as soon as Trump came in, it was moved to 2.5 minutes to midnight, both because of the nuclear threat, which recognized to be serious, and the threat of environmental catastrophe, which was not considered in the earlier years, now is. Those are the overwhelmingly the most crucial issues that face us. Everything else fades into insignificance in comparison to them. Those are literally questions of survival. And 2.5 minutes to midnight means extraordinary danger. These should be the major focus of attention. And it's kind of astonishing to see the way they're ignored throughout the whole electoral campaign. Practically no mention of them. Every Republican candidate, every single one, either with regard to the climate, either denied what is happening or else said the moderates like Jeb Bush, Kasich said, well, maybe it's happening, but it doesn't matter. We shouldn't do anything about it.
Well, the U.S. just led the boycott at the U.N. of the nuclear ban talks.
Of the nuclear ban. It joined it with the other nuclear powers, unfortunately. There's also the question of the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. There are now three nuclear powers which have refused to ratify it, China, the United States, and Israel. And if tests begin again, it's an extremely serious danger. As I mentioned, it was when the first tests were carried out that the doomsday clock went to 2 minutes to midnight. There's the problem of the New START Treaty, a treaty that there has been inadequate but significant reduction in nuclear weapons since the end of the Cold War. The New START Treaty is supposed to carry it forward. Russia and the United States have overwhelming mass of the nuclear weapons, and this would cut down the number, but also the more threatening ones would reduce it. Trump has indicated, I don't know, nobody knows what he means, but he's indicated that is what he calls a bad deal for the United States, suggesting maybe we should pull out of it, which would be a disaster. I mean, these are major issues. And the fact that they're barely being discussed is a shattering commentary on the level of contemporary civilization.
Well, Noam Chomsky, I wanted to ask you, those on the left are accustomed to looking at the American government basically as in the service of the capitalist class, the politicians. Occasionally you had a Rockefeller or actual member of the capitalist class who went into government. But now with this Trump administration, it's an extraordinary number of extremely wealthy people have actually moved directly into government. And yet you're seeing this narrative that they are attracting support from the white working class of the country. Can you talk about this, the capitalists directly taking over the running of government?
Well, they, as you say, they run it all the time. Simple measures like campaign funding alone, simple measure like that, is a very close predictor, not only of electoral victory, but even of policies. That's been true for a century. If you take a look at the analysis of public attitude, a major topic in academic political science is comparing popular attitudes with public policy. It's pretty straightforward, public policy. You can see popular attitudes we know a lot about from extensive polling. And the results are pretty startling. It turns out that about 70% of voters, which is maybe half the electorate, about 70% of voters are literally disenfranchised, the lower 70% on the income scale, meaning that their own representatives pay no attention to their attitudes and preferences. If you move up the income scale, you get a little more correlation, more influence. The very top, which is probably a fraction of 1% if you could get the data, that's where policy is set. Now, the Trump administration is kind of a caricature of this. It's always pretty much true, but here it's as if they're kind of purposely trying to flaunt the fact that this country is run by Goldman Sachs and billionaires, and nobody else counts.
Wilbur Ross, Betsy DeVos,
all of them. I mean, it's almost like a shocking parody, as if they're trying to show, yeah, what we all know is true is dramatically true, and we're going to show it to you. An interesting question, the one you raise, is how are they maintaining support among the people they're kicking in the face? That's not uninteresting. And if you look into it, there's a number of factors. First of all, many of the Trump voters, white working class voters, quite a few of them voted for Obama in 2008. You go back to the Obama campaign, the exciting words were hope and change. I don't usually agree with Sarah Palin, but when she asked where's this hopey-changey stuff, she wasn't talking nonsense. It quickly became clear there's no hope and there's no change. And working people were significantly disillusioned. You could see it right in Massachusetts, where when Kennedy died, you know, the liberal lion, there was going to be a vote for to replace him in 2010. Amazingly, a Republican won in Democratic Massachusetts Kennedy seat, and union voters didn't vote for the Democrats. They were very upset by the fact that they had been cheated, they felt rightly, by the Obama campaign of promises. And they turned to their bitter class enemy, who at least talks the words. The Republicans have mastered the technique of talking words as if you're sort of an ordinary guy, you know, kind of guy you'd meet in a bar, that sort of thing. It goes back to Reagan and his jelly beans and Bush, you know, mispronouncing words and so on and so forth. It's a game that's played, and it's a con game, but in the absence of any opposition, it works. And what happens when there is an opposition? That's very striking. The most astonishing fact about the last election, which is the Sanders achievements, that's a break from a century of American political history. As I said, you can pretty well predict electoral outcomes simply by campaign funding alone. There's other factors that intensify it. Here comes Sanders, somebody nobody ever heard of, no support from the wealthy, no support from corporations. The media ignored or disparaged him. He even used a scare word, socialist, came from nowhere. He would have won the Democratic Party nomination if it hadn't been for the shenanigans of the Obama-Clinton party managers who kept him out, might have been president, from nothing. That's an incredible break. It shows what can happen when policies are proposed that do meet the general just concerns of much of the population.
Do you think he could still win if he ran again?
Well, there was a Fox News poll a couple of days ago, Fox News, asking who's your favorite political figure. Sanders was way ahead, far ahead of anybody else, with no vocal, articulate support among the concentrations of power, media, corporations, elsewhere. In fact, if you look at policy preferences, you see something similar. We already mentioned the health issue. On issue after issue, much of the public that is actually voting for their bitter class enemy, if you look at the policies, actually favor social democratic policies, even environmental policies.
We've had hundreds of questions come in from every means to ask you. One of them is Ty Williams, who asked via Twitter about Trump exploiting fear. Ty asked, could you please expand on your comments on Alternet that Trump administration could stage an attack? What historical parallel do you have in mind?
Well, actually, the statement I made was pretty muted. It wasn't quite as strong as the headlines indicated. What I pointed out, and what everyone, I think, is aware of, is that sooner or later, this con game is not going to work. People will understand he's not bringing back jobs. He's not going to recreate partly illusory, partly real picture of what life was like in the past with manufacturing jobs and a functioning society, and you could get ahead and so on and so forth. He's not going to create that. What happens at that point? Something has to be done to maintain control. The obvious technique is scapegoating. So blame it on immigrants, on the Muslims, on somebody. But that can only go so far. The next step would be, as I said, an alleged terrorist attack, which is quite easy. In fact, almost normal to like.
Ja, we zijn live op Radio Paddepoel.
We hebben maximaal nul luisteraars.
Ja, maar ik heb ook maximaal nul luisteraars.
Oh, we zijn meer woorden dan nul.
Dat kan niet, dat moet je instellen.
Dan hoef je ook niet te streamen.
We zijn live op Radio Parknest. Nee, Radio Paddepoel.
Ik hoor niks.
Je hoort niks.
Hij speelt wel, maar hij hoort niks.
Nou ja, ik zie wel uitslag.
Ik niet.
Ja, daar is het. Net aan de baan, het eerste prijsvriend.
Is dit nu op de radio? Of niet? Ik ben live als het goed is.
Oh, ja, dan moet ik deze. Ben ik live? Ja, we zijn live. Ja, ja, we zijn live. Is dat de bediening?
Nou, dit is een test.
Dan kan hij dus niet in, hè? Nee, is niet bezet. Daarom krijgt hij Operation Not Permitted.
Ja, we zijn aan het proberen live te gaan op de Radio Paddepoel. En dat lukt vrij aardig. Maar er is sprake van een nieuwe telefoon. Dus misschien zijn we zo meteen weer in de lucht. Waar komt je geluid?
Als hij uitzendt, kun jij er niet bij. Hij moet uit zijn om live te gaan bij jou. Want jullie delen
het live.
Ik
ben wel echt hoog.
Jou, maar hij staat niet actief. Ja, ja, dat heeft geen zin.
Wacht even hoor. Waar komt jouw geluid hier?
Dat komt hier. Ja, nee, daar staan.
Ja,
maar
ik kom zo. Ja, er is een enorm tekort aan glazen. Ze doen tegenwoordig 80 maaltijden per dag hier op Park West. En, enorm goedlopende toko, dus laat ze alsjeblieft oprotten met die kapitaalzuchtige koffiecompany-idioten die hier terecht willen komen. Zeg nee! Zeg nee tegen toko's. Zeg ja tegen Parknest.
Er zit 12 seconden zo tussen.
Ja, ja, ja. Het is, het duurt altijd een tijdje.
Nee,
Mel. Ik wil dat je het doet.
Ja, dat is heel goed.
Ik zet de liefde uit. Dat
kan wel.
We zijn al aan het uitzenden. Wil je iets zeggen?
Nee, nee, dankjewel.
There was an error. Operation not permitted. Livestream stop.
Precies, er komt er een hei aan staan.
Oh, jij bent aan het fokken.
Ja, ik ben aan het uitzenden.
Precies.
Ja, dat doe ik wel vaker. Maar goed, blijf lekker luisteren naar Radio Paddepoel, want er komt altijd meer. Maar je weet nooit.
mein hem 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 hem.
Ja, ja, ja.
Kapot is. En dus alle bewegingen zijn met de
Vienna bijvoorbeeld een shirt kopen, dan moet die arm er wel eerst omheen. Als je die eerste onderarm helemaal gesneden moet gaan, en als je die eigenlijk dan wel moet je eerst links maar blijf ook naar beneden, rechts, en niet zo.
En het is er weer over. Dat gezamenlijk met die kleren, dat is echt een nood. Dan begin je als kind en in het keurslijf van de samenleving.
Ja.
Ik zei, nou, in Ramallah hebben ze heel weinig kleren aan. Omdat het op heel warm is, dus ze doen een dekentje op. Dus ze hebben toch eigenlijk weinig kleren aan. Omdat ze alleen maar een dekentje op, of een burnoes. Zo. Maar ik zou nooit een burnoes met een rits nemen. Altijd met die touwen aan elkaar gestopt.
Ja, en houd je touwtje burnoes?
Ja, dat kan wel. Ja, die hebben we nodig. Die zijn echt aangezicht. Robert Jasper Grootveld is wel de grootste kunstenaar die ik ooit in levende lijven van gedacht heb. Ja, die mensen bestaan dus echt. Ze hebben ook samengewerkt met andere mensen.
Hij was eigenlijk een meester voor jou?
Ja.
Zou je kunnen zeggen?
Ja, dat die mensen, ja, nou, het burgemeester, ja. Het was een burgemeester. Nou, hij is ook burgemeester toen. Daar hebben we dus genoeg. Daar gaan we voor. Daar gaan we dus nu voor. Ze gaan met koeken. En het gedoogbeleid, gedogen, het drogen. Nou, ik moet het zijn wij ook even verstaan. Warm. En het moet je ook weer gaan uitwerken via gedoogde blaadjes. En dan hebben we, en daar begon het allemaal mee, met het IA-project. En de grote mee aan de slag. Toen hadden ze een paar bouwtekeningen gemaakt. Toen zeiden ze, nou, ik heb alleen maar een boodschappentas om naar buiten te gaan. Ik ben een jongen van Nederlandse huizen, ja? Zoals ja. Jij. En dan heb je minimaal een boodschappentas, dus je kunt voor de buurvrouw een buurjongen worden door boodschappen te doen.
Ja.
Nou,
ja,
voor
dat
jezelf boodschappen. Ja, ik vind alleen dat gebuurjongen vind ik zo vervelend. Vrouwen zijn fucking over de 40 en dan ga je tegen mij vuurjongens zeggen. Kom op, wie ben ik dan wel? Nou, dat vind ik dus weer gezamenlijk van hun. Gewoon echt waar. En daar gaat het dus gewoon elke dag nu steeds meer, godzijdank, de radio ook over. Want anders heb ik helemaal niks om over te klagen.
Hmm.
Weet je hoe ze in Engeland met bananen omgaan?
Ja, schandelijk is dat, ik heb dat gezien.
Heel goed juist.
Vind je?
Met tomaten. Ze doen ze bij elkaar. Dus als jij bananen pakt, dan doe je er daarna een tomatenpuree overheen.
Ja, maar ze zijn er, heel, zijn er toch een beetje achterbaks in, want die bananen moet zich eerst uitkleden. Hè? Dan wordt het uit een jasje,
nee, schoenen,
een jasje gehouden.
Schoenen. Je
en dan
maakt
het ook
naar boven. Jij maakt het ook naar boven. Je moet hem omdraaien. Je moet hem omdraaien, die banaan. En je moet hem van beneden naar wat jij denkt boven is afbellen. Dat is van boven naar beneden.
Ja, maar toch, ja.
Ja, maar
toch. Nou, er zit toch iets heel achterbaks in dat gebouw. Ik begrijp
het. Ja, nee, maar Engelsen, dat klopt. Engelsen sowieso, klopt. Dat is waar.
Ja, nee, dat blijft toch. Dat is toch dat klassensysteem wat ze daar hebben. En dat zie je dan weer op die manier overgedragen. Dat zie je dan eigenlijk toch weer voor één moet
maar
buigen.
Maar de Fransen ook, hè. Maar die maakten er een nobele gelofte van. En dan heb je de lui Italianen of de droge Spanjaard.
Ja. Nou moeten we niet zeggen dat we hier nou zoveel beter zijn, want tenslotte, hier mag helemaal niks meer buiten spelen. Alles moet binnen. Alles moet onder glas.
En de binnentuin heeft een ijzeren hek ervoor. De binnentuin heeft een ijzeren hek.
Dus dat,
maar er zit wel een lampje bij, inderdaad. Ja. Zeg, als ik hier naar boven ga, heb ik dus straatverlichting door elke
Dat is een martelmethode, dat is bekend, van de nooit het licht uit doen. En dan word je op een gegeven moment, kijk nou naar al die planten, kijk nou naar al het fruit, dat heeft meer dan 23 uur licht krijgt, dat hier zo maar groeit. En dan eten wij dat vervolgens op, ja. En dan kan je daar kijken dat we allemaal zo gestrest en zo opgefokt zijn, en dat dan vervolgens iedereen massaal aan de overpsychotica moet, ja.
Ja.
Nou ja, goed, of dan dat zogenaamde biologische, dat is natuurlijk ook wel een leuke.
Nou ja,
als het niet biologisch is, wat is het dan?
Het is makkelijker voor de gebruiker gewoon. Het is gebruikersvriendelijker.
Het is makkelijker.
Dus ja. Dat scheelt gewoon. Dus daar heb ik minder om over na te denken. Want zorgen maken, dat is natuurlijk ook wat waar we het net over hebben. Dat is die eeuwige zorg gewoon. Ja. Dat gezorgen en heb je. En daar, oh ja, ja. Ik zeg ja. Nee,
ja, ja, daar zit
helemaal
de hele,
waar namelijk. Daar zit
het
in, ja.
Er zit de hele Albert Heijn zit dus ook vol tegenwoordig. Met alles in een bakje en voorgesneden. Ja, kijk, dat ja. is alleen maar open doen en hop naar de mond. Gezouten, ja. zoet, wat je wil. Ja. En dat is kant en klaar. Geen zorgen meer. Dat is eigenlijk wat de mensen daar zoeken.
Ja, maar het is toch de hele zorg. Dus ik bedoel, die zorgen die mensen zich toch steeds weer maken over, weet ik veel, dit tekort, dat te plan. Weet je, dat ik denk van nou, klak, 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 klak. Dan gaat kunststof kapot breken en dan zeggen zij van nou, dan kan je heel weinig maken. Dat is mooi gedaan.
Ja. Maar dit is sowieso een overschot. Dit is eerder een tekort aan tekort, zou ik zeggen, dan een tekort.
Nou,
dit is een overschot. En zo'n tekort, daar moeten we meer van hebben.
Schiet de deur open, dat is de deur. Hoorde je dat? Het lijkt toch voor een malle wel, jongen. Wij kunnen afschieten. Mijn eigen deur. Mijn hele huis is ook helemaal beveiligd. Hè? Weet je dat mijn alarm zelfs kan afgaan?
Ja. Zelfs als je er zelf.
Ja, nee, maar via roken.
Maar dat moet je uitkijken, want dan soms gaat het alarm dus af. En dan denk je, is er iemand anders, maar dan ben je het zelf. En dan heb je zelf het alarm afgezet, maar dan begrijp je dan niet hoe dat dan kan. En dan denk je van ja, iedereen de deur uit, uit, maar dan ben je zelf nog binnen en dan blijft het alarm afgaan. En dan denk je van, hey, er is iemand anders hier in die ruimte met mij.
Hallo. Hallo, ja. Het is inmiddels... Ah, de klok doet het niet meer. Ik denk dat het inmiddels wel een uur of 6 geweest is. Jawel, 6:08. Ik ben wat later. Dat komt omdat de parkeerautomaten zijn veranderd. En daar moet ik nu alleen maar met plastic geld, kan je daarvoor met mee betalen. En ik was er juist aan gewend geraakt om contant geld met mij mee te nemen. Dus ik heb aan een voorbijganger gevraagd of hij zo goed wilde zijn om met zijn pinpas mijn parkeerkaart te betalen. Dames en heren, dat is gelukt. Dus hulde aan de vriendelijkheid en de coöperatieve houding van de voorbijganger. Een klein moment, ik ga even wat aansluiten en dan kom ik zo dadelijk bij je terug met het reguliere burgerwaanzinprogramma.
Gisteren geflikt om zo'n kastje waar die gemene dingetjes altijd op zitten, weet je wel, om buiten te zetten.
Ja.
Glasplaat erop. En ik denk van ja, de dag daarvoor, spijt, hoe kan dat in godsnaam, zet jij dat zomaar voor de vuil? Hoe laat je dat hier afwerken? En het is een kastje van je, weet je wel, dat ik elke keer dat ik daar langs loop, dat je spijt moet krijgen of zo.
Maar je weet toch ook, als je naar de tandarts gaat, hè, en dan heb je zogenaamd een gaatje, ja, dat,
ja.
Ik bedoel, ik heb dat gaatje nooit gezien, maar dan maken ze een gat, dan zegt ze eerst van, je hebt een gaatje, ja, en dan maken ze vervolgens een gat erin, hè, dan denk ik, ja, maar dan kan ik het ook, hè, dus dan is dat gat, en dan kun je het niet meer ontkennen, maar dan vullen ze dat op, ja, en dan stoppen ze dan een doosje erin, en daarom, sommige mensen ontvangen dan ook de radio, want het is niet wat afgestemd, want het is ontvangen, niet als zender, maar eigenlijk als zender niet gebouwd. Maar goed, het maakt mij allemaal niet uit. Ik denk van ja, ik heb geen geheimen. Dus
nou, ik weet niet veel hoe laat het is. Het is hier heel weinig.
Nee.
Het zit in maatje. Dus het is net zei van ja, elektra-kijk uit, bla. Want het is straks al de deur in het slot. En dat is dus precies gebeurd.
Nu zijn ze buiten. Nu zijn ze
buiten. En ik heb heel weinig zin om iets te vragen aan. Weet ik veel om. Maar ik weet wel hoe ik kan gaan. Alleen dan moet ik weer een heel stuk lopen.
En de tandarts is ver weg.
De tandarts is gewoon precies als ik op hoogloop. Ben ik er heel snel. Maar je hooglopen, waar ik echt. Hoe flik je het zo snel als toe, hè? Om je eigen tandartsspullen, waar je dat geknerst met dat metaal op het glas kan horen. Op dat metaal. Houdertje waar dat glas in ligt, want zo krijg je het dus in het gaatje, ja. En dan denk ik, god, ja. Echt waar, oh wacht even, we zijn wel gewoon thuis. Dus het is heel weinig, dan bel ik gewoon met. Weet je dat eigenlijk als een soort is, de sleutel geeft die niet thuis gemaakt is. En dat, nou ja, dat dacht ik, weinig.
Maar ik kwam hier dus na toch zeker wel meer dan een jaar, 2 jaar misschien wel, met een sleutel. En die paste dus gewoon. En dat was een hele mooie verrassing. En daar was ik heel blij, want ik dacht van ja, kan ik er wel in? Ik wist, er is niemand. Daarom was ik er ook hierheen gegaan. En toen deed hij het. En dat
scheelde wel.
Dat scheelde enorm. Ja, ik had ook wel anders van buiten achter een andere kant van de deur kunnen staan. Dan had ik ook muziek kunnen draaien. En in principe kan je af en toe het eigenlijk allemaal uitmaken.
Maar het maakt wel uit.
Maar
het maakt draaien maakt wel uit. Ja. Want ik heb het recht. Tot nu toe. En is na 4 uur of zo, 1600.
Ja, bijna.
60. Ja, nou, dan heb ik nog een half uur uit. Dat duurt wel. Want zij hebben nog steeds kamer om open te doen. Dat is het voordeel om bij de computer naar binnen te kijken, dat de telefoon niet meer aan.